Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to the Speaking of Sex podcast. On today's show, we have a fabulous guest, Cindy Darnell. Cindy is one of Australia's leading sex educators and the creator of an online video training called The Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal. Cindy coaches individuals all around the world and travels internationally to teach all about sexual pleasure, desire, and eroticism. Cindy, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
The first thing I noticed when I went on your website is your tagline reads, quote, "Because pleasure matters." Can you start us off by telling us how pleasure matters to you, why you teach this work? What is the core of it for you?
That's such a great question. I think pleasure matters because it's so overlooked, because it's perceived as something that is frivolous or superfluous or unnecessary. And in our cultures, in Western cultures in particular, there's a real emphasis on being rewarded for suffering. That if you have suffered in some way through, you know, through work or through pain or through something terrible that's happened, that after that, then you are deserving of riches and deserving of rewards. Yet there's no celebration of pleasure in Western culture. That you can have so much, but only so much and no more than that. Yet when we ask somebody to define how much that is that we're allowed to have, nobody really has an answer, but they seem to know when you've had too much because people get offended, don't they? They get stroppy and they get angry, or they want to try and silence you around that. And I think that absence of pleasure, the overemphasis on the celebration of suffering, if you will, is something that has been embedded into the Western psyche to the degree that we have forgotten how to connect with that. And so if you look at little children, for example, they're like just pleasure-seeking machines. They will be completely absorbed in whatever it is that they're doing with no regard for what else is going around them, for consequences, for anything like that. Now, I'm not suggesting that adults necessarily should be taking it to that extreme. One must be aware of limitations and consequences and the effect that they're having on other people. Absolutely. But the thing that children have access to that adults seem to forget is that ability to arouse oneself through play, and I mean arousal in the sense of enlivening the spirit, enlivening the body, getting blood moving through the body, that sense of feeling invigorated as distinct from erotic arousal, which is part of it, but a separate thing, that children have access to those enlivened and aroused states from the minute they wake up to the minute they go to sleep. And as adults, we seem to forget that is something that we have access to, because our minds, we get distracted with, you know, schoolwork and responsibilities and work and parents and bosses and, you know, all the stuff that we have to get done, that at the end of the day, sometimes there's no room for pleasure. And then it's not until we hit a roadblock that we actually realize, oh my goodness, I actually haven't had fun for 6 months. And that's unfortunate, and it doesn't have to be that way. And so that's why pleasure matters.
Yes, I have a 2-year-old daughter, and she is teaching me so much about pleasure and embodiment and joy. It's a real honor to parent a very joyful 2-year-old discovering the world in her body. And what do you see as the positive consequences of bringing more pleasure, sexual and otherwise, into your life? Like, what does it change about how you live?
What it does is, I think it creates an opportunity for us to have a richer experience of being alive. The bottom line is that, you know, from a survival point of view, we can probably live without pleasure. We can, if it came down to brass tacks, we can probably live without it. However, if given the choice between having a life that was infused with pleasure and a life that was just a humdrum, rudimentary cardboard existence, I wonder how many people would choose the latter over the former if they realized that they had a choice. My hunch is that if people knew that it was possible, they would choose pleasure over a humdrum and rudimentary life. But because so much of the way our societies are geared is about focusing on everything except having a good time, we focus on getting ahead, we focus on security, we focus on practical things that have to keep us alive day to day, which is fine and necessary. It's not that one thing sort of negates the other necessarily. But what it does is it opens up the possibility of being able to find richness in beauty in everyday moments, in smaller moments. Mm-hmm. And for some people, that can also engage eroticism, that it doesn't have to be sexual necessarily. And I'm very aware, as I'm sure you are, that not everybody is sexually oriented, and that's okay. But for those that are, finding ways to make room for that in their lives, and it doesn't have to be daily necessarily, and it doesn't necessarily even have to involve genitals, but being able to access that kind of heightened arousal that I was talking about before, that brings pleasure, that brings a rush to the skin, that brings that sense of freedom and abandon and an escape from the day-to-day humdrum. That's what pleasure can bring to your life if you allow it and make room for it.
Yeah, and it's so much about allowing it and then also not letting that be interrupted by the shame and guilt and fear that so many of us feel.
Exactly. This is those suffering narratives where we get rewarded for suffering. That there are people I meet in my therapeutic practice, because I work in Australia as a therapist and a counsellor as well as a sex educator, and people who feel guilty about wanting to do certain sexual things or have certain sexual experiences. Yet if I were to talk about wanting to enjoy drinking apple juice, that at no point would they question, oh, maybe I shouldn't be drinking this apple juice. But because it's sex, for some reason, that has a whole different set of rules applied to it that mean that people feel compelled to have to question whether or not they're worthy of it, whether or not they deserve access to it. And that's a particularly unfortunate chain of events that occurs all over the world because of the way that sex is treated. It's not treated as something it's not as revered as other kinds of pleasure, such as food.
Yeah, and certainly not thought of something that can enhance the other parts of your life and make you more productive and a better parent or friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
In one of your online courses, you talk about the, quote, top three things sexually satisfied people have in common. Can you reveal one or two of these qualities?
I can. Look, the main one is the curiosity that people have. And this comes back to that notion of the childlike state that we can go into when we allow ourselves to experience playfulness and pleasure for its own sake, without an agenda, without an outcome. So, for example, when a child is playing, pirates, and they're all there sitting on an old log in someone's yard, and they are convinced that they are on a pirate ship, and nothing you could say to them would tell them that they are not on a pirate ship. They are totally on a pirate ship and they are having a great time. And however they work out who's the captain of the ship and who's the whatever else they all are. But for those moments, they are completely engrossed in being on a pirate ship. And whatever the story is that unfolds, they allow themselves to go there without considering, is this okay? Am I allowed to do this? They just give themselves over completely to their curiosity to see where the game goes, because they don't know necessarily when the game starts where it's going to end up. Is the boat going to get shipwrecked? Are they going to end up on Treasure Island? Are they going to, end up on a reality TV show? There's a zillion possibilities. But generally speaking, when we are playing, it's not with an ultimate goal in mind, except in the case of a game where we approach it to win. And sometimes if that sense of curiosity gets taken over by a need to win or a need to be right or a need to assert oneself over someone else without their permission, that takes away the curiosity and it takes away that level of inquiry that is the thing that can actually be the facilitator of rich experiences. When we're much more invested in being right than being connected, we miss out on the playfulness and the pleasure that so many of us seek.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I also notice with my daughter is when she finds something that brings her joy, she just goes again, 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 for really as long as we can tolerate it.
Yes,
we're always the one to end the games, you know, and it can be as simple as putting something silly on your head and letting it drop off. And she's just delighted by it.
Yes.
And I think when it comes to sex, so many of us are so scared to ask for more. Like, we should be satisfied if we have sex at all. And this idea of trying to enhance our sex lives or learn more, or build skills, or ask for something new is terrifying to people. Why do you think that is?
I think, again, it comes back to that sort of notion of stoicism and that, you know, one should be grateful for what one has, and asking for more means it sort of indicates some sort of a flaw in your personality, that you're not satisfied with what you've got. Mm. And to ask for more means you could be being greedy or demanding, especially for women, that would be a thing.
Yeah.
There are similar consequences for men, but it's coming from a different place. But that notion of coming across as being too needy or being too, just being too intense, too demanding, that implies somehow that even for partners, I think that they can often feel like that they are not enough,
mm-hmm.
and that this can then lead to communication troubles, and people become nervous then, especially if they're in intimate relationships, that any kind of requests for something different can then indicate that the relationship is in trouble. And that's not the case. In some cases, it is the problem, but in a lot of cases, it's not. Being able to ask for and discuss sexual variety is not an indication that a relationship is on the rocks. So I think that fear that people have of wanting to ask for things is partly sort of twofold, that fear of breaking down the stability and the security that they may have, or the fear of how they're going to be perceived. Mm-hmm. Because culturally we don't revere people who appear to take too much or to want too much.
Yeah, or want something that's out of the normal range, whatever you perceive. And it's so funny, we get emails from people who are like, I'm terrified to reveal this to my partner. And what they want to reveal is anything from, I want more blowjobs, to, I want to dress up in furry costumes and go to a sex party, right? Like, it's this whole range of what is considered outside that box of normal.
Yes.
And everyone's perceptions are so different. So
yeah.
What is one thing you want men to understand about female sexuality and vice versa?
What do I want men to understand about female sexuality? I think that it would be, oh, wow, that's a really good question. I think that I would like men to understand that complexity and variety is not abnormal. That if they are with the same woman for however long, 1 year, 20 years, and that over that time what she likes varies through the month or varies over the course of 20 years, that is completely normal and that is completely okay. Or if he has a variety of female lovers and he can't work out why one likes this and another one likes this and another one likes this, that is also completely okay. I remember doing a vulva seminar many years ago in Melbourne, and a man in the audience during the Q&A put his hand up and he said, "Why does it take women so long to orgasm?" And I thought he was joking, and he wasn't joking. It was a very serious question because he genuinely thought that it was a problem. Mm-hmm. And my response to him was, why does it concern you how long it takes? Because if it is a physiological thing, like if your arm's getting sore or your tongue's getting sore or your fingers are getting sore or your penis is getting sore, then change it up and do something else. Or that's what sex toys are invented for. You know, they're your friend. They're not the threat. They're on your side. And alternate your activities. And when I quizzed him about what he was so concerned about with why it took women in his mind so long to orgasm, his concern was not so much about whether or not they were having a good time, but whether or not he was going to be perceived as a good lover.
Yeah.
And so his question about women's pleasure was actually about him. And so I guess I would really like to encourage men to consider that maybe, in addition to women having really varied erotic patterns within the same woman or with different women, that your capacity as a lover is going to be greatly enhanced if you're willing to be flexible and follow the processes that she might ask for, rather than sticking to a script and making it all about whether or not you've made her come.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I would like men to know. And in terms of women to men, I would like them to know that the presence of an erection has nothing to do with them.
Yes.
That men and their erections, the erections are incredibly unreliable. And every man, gay man or straight man or bisexual man, through the course of his life is going to experience some sorts of irregularities with his erections. This is normal. And people are often very invested in being normal. And the amount of young men that I work with, and older men, who of all orientations will come and talk to me about their erection trouble, and their number one concern, first of all, after feeling like that they are not normal, is that their partner takes it as a slight, mm-hmm. as if the absence of erection means that they don't love them anymore or they don't like them anymore. And I really want women to know in this case that your partner's erection has got absolutely nothing to do with you.
Yes. Let's put out these memos. And building on that, I think it's so important for women to not think that the erection is about their desirability and to hinge their entire sexuality on how physically attractive they are perceived.
Not. Yes.
It all is so connected.
Yeah. I mean, every single man that I have worked with in my practice who has come to see me about erection problems, which is the number one reason men come to see me, by the way, they all report that their partners are worried and that it leads to arguments, that the especially in the heterosexual relationships, where the women are like, "You don't love me anymore, you don't like me, are you having sex with somebody else?"
Yeah.
You know, "You're watching too much porn," and all of this, blah, blah, blah. And it just escalates into these extraordinary arguments. And so these poor guys come to me and they're like, "I need you to make my dick work." And I feel like saying to them, "Darling, there's nothing wrong with your dick," provided that there's nothing wrong with their dick.
Yeah.
I have a little process that I go through to work out whether there is or there isn't. But if we have determined that the pipes are working, then we start looking at the other kind of emotional and physiological reasons that this could be happening. And I often invite them to bring their female partners into the session so I can explain to them that it's not about them, and that it's not about whether or not they're beautiful or whether they've got morning breath or whether they've put on a few pounds, that it's not about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about creating space for possibility. And, you know, you can still, there's loads and loads of things you can do without an erection. You don't need to have an erection to have sex. You need an erection for anal sex, probably, if you're going to be doing penis in anus sex, that would be helpful. But everything else, you don't really need an erection for that. And the thing about erections is that they come and go, no pun intended. So, you know, an erection can be present for a period of time and then it can wane a little bit and then it'll come back and it'll wane a little bit, and that is normal. So this is why we need to expand our skill set. We need to expand our repertoire of things that we know. So if the erection does start to recede for a little while, no problem. You can switch it up and go and do something else and it may come back. Often it does.
And this conversation is just one of the many ways where anatomy and intimacy and relationships are all connected. And I want to talk a little bit about your online video training called The Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal. And we will put a link to that on the show notes page for this podcast. But can you explain your perspective on why intimately knowing the anatomy is essential for a happy, healthy sex life?
Yeah. So the reason why this is important is because there are so many myths about how sex should be. And I create the Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal because I found I was just repeating myself over and over and over. I was giving the same information at every workshop, at every seminar, in every individual clinical session. The amount of people who were coming to me with questions that were basically rooted in the fact that their physiological knowledge was not robust enough. That the sex education they got at school, if they got it at all, was about penises going into vaginas. It was about making babies and it was never about pleasure. And so when I ask them, you know, where did you learn about sex? And they sort of look at me a bit funny. And I would wait and give them some time to think about it. And they would invariably say, oh, and I learned about how to make babies at high school. And I'll say, okay, but what about the stuff that actually matters? Where did you learn about that stuff? And then it would dawn on them that they never did learn it. And that in many ways they had just made it up, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with experimenting and making stuff up is perfectly okay, except when you start hoping for results or outcomes or goals, and this is what I was talking about before with the kids playing on the pirate ship, that it's generally not about goals, but when it starts becoming goal-oriented, people start getting very invested in ideas about what's right and wrong and what's normal and what's abnormal. And in terms of things like erections and orgasms and how these things happen or don't happen, and then going beyond that, what they mean, the cultural associations we have with a woman who's orgasmic as opposed to a woman who is not. What does that imply about her womanhood? What does that imply about her femininity? And the same with men with the erections. If a man doesn't have erections on cue, the implication often is that he's not manly enough, that he's not masculine enough. And in a culture that's so invested in patriarchy as we are, to be perceived as unmasculine is a travesty for a lot of men. And this is heartbreaking. But it's not until they realize that understanding how erotic anatomy works from a pleasure perspective and not from a reproduction perspective, that they then get to understand how normal their experience of sex is and that they are actually perfectly normal and perfectly okay just as they are. And where they've been strung out and pissed off and, you know, on the verge of a breakdown in some cases has been based around the fact that they have not had access to knowledge about how their bodies work that they should have got when they were teenagers, when they were developing, but nobody told them because I don't know of any schools really anywhere in the world where they teach this kind of stuff. Maybe in Europe, in Northern Europe, there's a couple of schools, I think, that are quite progressive, but certainly not here in Australia and not in the US as far as I'm aware, where that information is shared as readily as we would share the anatomy of, you know, the ankle. We have no trouble talking about the bones of the feet, but we won't talk about the pelvic floor because it's just considered unnecessary and superfluous. And this is where it comes back down to this idea of, you know, pleasure being unnecessary, that we don't bother to teach people how pleasure works because you can live without it. And well, yeah, you can, but when it goes wrong, it goes horribly wrong, and it literally can drain the life out of people, and that can all be circumvented by just having some information.
And you provide it so beautifully in this course, and I really appreciate your approach. It's super easy to watch, and you can watch it in different segments, and I think couples should watch it together and talk about what they're learning. So thank you for investing that time and work into creating this resource for us all. Oh,
thank you. Thank you so much. No, I mean, it's great to have that feedback, because I mean, I did make it with an international audience in mind, and I wanted it to be as clear and straightforward as possible without being too dull, but without being patronizing and too cheesy and too simplistic. And so the whole series is 5 half-hour modules. So it's 2.5 hours, or just actually just over 2.5 hours in total, describing all the configurations of the genitals in references to penises and vulvas in particular, and anuses. There's a module called butt. That's not all. So, and yeah, as you say, I mean, it's designed to be watched in chunks. It's not something that you would necessarily consume as a marathon unless you were a major, major, major sex geek, which I'm sure some of your listeners are. But it's designed to be watched in sort of 10-minute chunks, because it's quite dense, it's quite scientifically rich, and it takes a bit of time sometimes for that information to be absorbed. And it is pitched at adults, and that's the other thing that I did with it intentionally, is that it's pitched at folks over 16, so which technically I know legally doesn't make them adults, but from a interest in sex point of view, folks from the age of 16 onwards would be interested in it, because it addresses the reasons that people have sex, not just the basics of how it works, but it also explores the reasons that we do it, such as wanting to have orgasms, wanting to understand how to touch our partners, wanting to be perceived as a good lover, as opposed to doing it to only stroke our own ego, that we can actually learn to touch in ways that make us feel good, but also make our partners feel good.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And what are you most excited about in the world of sex right now?
Oh, what am I most excited about in the world of sex? Well, I personally have developed quite an interest in Buddhism over the last 5 or so years. I mean, I've actually been interested in Buddhism for probably about 20 years, but I've taken on a real robust interest in it in the last 5 years. And I regularly go to Dharma classes and meditation classes, and I've been actively seeking out sort of different kinds of Buddhist teachers and trying to work out ways that sex and Buddhism interact, because generally speaking, a lot of spiritual paths or philosophical paths tend to not really pay that much attention to sex, and Buddhism doesn't in particular either, especially. But I am seeking out teachers who are willing to discuss with me the relationship between desire, which is a very contentious issue in Buddhism, because they, you know, a lot of Buddhists believe that desire is the root of suffering. Mm-hmm. And so I've been really trying to unpack that with some fabulous Buddhist teachers and friends of mine that I've met, and talking about, so what is it, you know, what is the role of desire, and is it really the cause of suffering, or are there other elements to it? And what can desire teach us about ourselves? And so I'm currently really interested in how the world of sex and that whole world that I've been very much immersed in for 20 years is intersecting with my increasing interest in Buddhism and mindfulness. And then even beyond that, how the intersections around neuroscience are informing our understanding of how the brain develops, and how that is related to mindfulness, and then how that relates back to libido and desire. So this is something that I'm really spending probably an extraordinary amount of time thinking about. That's sort of what I do on a Saturday night. But
love it.
That's I think what most excites me at the moment is the intersection of Buddhism, mindfulness, and libido.
I cannot wait to sit down with you and Barbara Corrales in New York someday and talk about it.
Yeah, I can't wait for that either.
I almost entered a Buddhist monastery out of college and instead went to San Francisco and got kinky.
Excellent choice.
It is.
Excellent choice. I'm sure either path would have worked out fabulously, and probably you would have ended up at the same place going on both paths. Yeah. So it's that's what I'm discovering anyway.
So where can our guests find you online when if they want to learn more?
Okay. So my website is cindydarnell.com, and that's spelled CYNDIDARNELL. And I have a mailing list there, which if they would like to keep in touch with me and what I do and my events, they can subscribe to my mailing list, and that's the best way to keep up with what I'm up to. I am increasingly spending more and more time in the US, and I'm hoping to be, I guess, bi-continental. I would like to be spending half of my life in the US. So if there are people who are interested in anything I've got to say and are enthusiastic about me being in the US, definitely feel free to make contact. The other thing is too that with my work as a therapist, I do offer sessions for folks via Skype and via Zoom. So if they feel comfortable with the online medium, which is becoming increasingly popular, and certainly in the form of sex therapy and relationship therapy, it can actually work very well. Folks certainly can check out my offerings in terms of how I offer coaching and counseling via Skype if they would like to have one-on-one sessions with me too. And of course they can get the Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal through my website. They can get it as a download, and there are actually hard copies available as well. We'd send them from Australia, so it'll take about 10 days, but if you're okay with that, we're okay with that. And it's really cheap. I think it's only about $2 for the shipping, so it's great.
Perfect. And we will link all of that up on the show notes page over at pleasuremechanics.com. And we look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Mm-hmm.